Chigozie Obioma has had incredible success with his two novels. Both have been shortlisted for the Booker Prize. And Sarah Lestrange, hello.
Hello, Claire.
You've been following Chigozie's career very closely.
Yes, I
know
have.
You interviewed him about his first book, The Fisherman. That was a tragedy about four Nigerian brothers. Can you tell me about the latest?
An Orchestra of Minorities is a tragedy too, Claire, and it's also set in Nigeria.
Which is where Chigozie is from.
Yeah, although he lives for the most part in the States now. And the book is about Chinonso, who's a poor farmer. He falls in love with a wealthy woman, and I think you can see where this is going. Her family despises him because they consider him beneath her. And to improve his status with her family, Chinonso travels abroad to study in Cyprus. And Claire, Chigozie tells me that the origin for this story is based in part on his own experience as a student in Cyprus.
So the story was inspired by somewhat by my own journey. So I made the very interesting and unusual leap to go to college, not anywhere in the UK or Canada or the usual destinations for Nigerians, but in Cyprus. You know, but
it is an unusual decision.
Oh, yeah, I was at the time. And one of the reasons why I made that journey was because I was about to be expelled from the school I used to be because I was a major activist at the time. And so my parents were like, okay, go to a place where you will be more peaceful.
Right, self-imposed exile.
Yeah, it was. And on getting there, I discovered something that really surprised me. So we were very conscious of that decision, and my family, even though we weren't like rich or anything, but my parents counted the cost. Okay, we could probably afford to have him go there in school and pay for everything. But on getting to Cyprus, I discovered that there were a lot of Nigerians who had been deceived. They weren't
really
there because they wanted to be.
How had they been deceived?
So they were like all these like fake agents who were like sprouting up here and there and claiming, oh, this is like, you know, one of the developed countries.
This
and
is so part of people, the EU type thing.
Yeah, the EU or something like that. And then they, you know, they pay a lot of money. Some of them borrow. And then coming to Cyprus, they discover that they'd been deceived. Because this is not the main Republic of Cyprus. This is the Turkish side, which is not recognized by the EU. It's like under some form of embargo. So one guy came in 2009. His name was Jay. And he had suffered a very brutal deceit. And, you know, he became very depressed the moment he came down from the plane. And like, you know, 4 or 5 days later, we heard that he had become very drunk and had gone up to the attic of this tall building and fell from there to his death.
Mm.
So in the aftermath of that, as a writer, I just began to like reflect on, you know, what happened. And one thing that became very pronounced to me in my reflection was that he had made, he has given me an information almost as an aside, you know, that the greatest reason why he came here was because he was in love with this woman and wanted to go back and be with her. He wanted to make money quickly. And so An Orchestra of Minorities was my way of like trying to retrace a step. What was the dynamics between them? Why would he have, you know, made the leap that he made? So that's the genesis of the novel.
But you're doing this in your imagination because you don't actually know the real story, do you?
No, absolutely I didn't. You know, I was only able to speak with him for like, you know, maybe 2 of those 4 or 5 days. So it was just me trying to like, you know, fill in the gaps.
And is writing this story also in a way to honour this senseless death of Jay, who was caught up in a scam that was beyond his control?
Absolutely. Because, you know, you ask yourself questions. You wonder, okay, fine. There were many people who were deceived the way he did. In fact, I had a girlfriend who at the time, her parents sold almost everything, thinking that she was going to go to this good country where she would start sending money back, you know, to Nigeria, only to discover that she'd been deceived. But most of these people survive. Somehow, they manage, they finish the school, or some of them immigrate somewhere else better than that place. So why was it that it was this guy who died this way, who couldn't make it out? So I wanted to, like, not only recollect that period of my life, but also to draw, like, a larger novel about class, about how, you know, his upward mobility or his attempt at doing that was one of the reasons why, you know, he died.
And within all of this is your ancestral knowledge of Igbo culture, because I felt like I was being told this story, not that I was reading it, because the narrator of the story is Chinonso's guardian spirit. Can you tell us, called a chi, what is a chi, and why did you tell Chinonso's story from the perspective of his guardian spirit?
So the chi is not only a spirit that embodies this character and therefore has access to a lot, because it's always with the character, can observe material and external actions that the character does, sometimes can guess in, you know, what they're thinking. But the chi is a chronicler of history and a repertoire of knowledge. It's existed for a long time. It's come and gone for many centuries. So I wanted not to just tell the story of this individual, but to chronicle, you know, the evolution of the civilization over a period of time. And also to have the chi not just tell the story of Chinonso, but its own story.
Now, as you mentioned, Christianity swept through Nigeria, and that's one of the themes of this novel, how Nigerian society has changed since slavery and colonization. Is there a lament here for the loss of Nigerian ways, and maybe something you feel keenly given you're living in the US, far from your homeland, having had to leave because of your activism?
Well, yes, I have to say that there's a kind of a lament. One of our problems is that we completely wiped out, the ways, our own culture and traditions. And they just look at me as a reactionary. But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, look, let us look at where we are today. Is the complete Western culture, is it working for us? If it's not working for us, then perhaps we could go back and see what we can pick from how people used to do things. Perhaps there might be answers, you know, buried in the archives. So that's one of the projects of this novel. So it's not just a novel that tells a personal story of this lonely and lowly farmer whose life goes awry, but I hope that it's also a monument that people can go back to if they want to learn about the civilization of the Igbo people.
Chigozie Obioma, I want to talk about poultry now. I would like to know about your decision to centre this farmer Chinonso's life in the world of farming poultry.
So across two novels, the central thrust of my approach to fiction is that I believe fervently that fiction begins and ends with character. So plot is impossible if it's not a function of character, which means that for you to create fiction, you have to see the human being, the character first. I wanted this lowly, this very poor guy who is cut off from the world by virtue of being an orphan with no relations around.
No mother or father left.
Yes, and the only associations he has is his chickens, is his birds to whom he has given his heart. And then, you know, he meets this woman who is a complete stranger, but he sees her about to throw herself into this river. And he thinks, look, I'm going to throw my prized chickens into the river to dissuade her. So at the beginning of this novel, he's a selfless man. But by novel's end, he has moved, he has journeyed from that spectrum to being vindictive and even somewhat mad, you could say.
Obsessive.
So that journey of the human psyche from one point to the other is what I'm interested in whenever I put pen to paper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I wanted to create him to be that lowly, that very poor character.
And it's from these chickens that we get the title for the novel. Chinonso despises hawks because they attack his chickens.
Right.
And the sounds the chickens make is what you call an orchestra of minorities. Where does this term come from?
Well, I have taken some liberty at it.
You're allowed.
I have to say some poetic license, which I'm sure you will permit me to have. But, you know, one of the most beautiful spectacles you will witness if you grow up in Africa or my part of Africa is the attack of the predator birds on the domestic defenseless ones. You know, it happens almost on daily basis. I would watch, you know, in wonder that happened. And I remember that they used to make a noise and people would be like, oh, this is the, you know, they would watch the hen, the mother hen, for instance, just running around, unable to do anything, you know, while the kite or the eagle is going upwards. And that crying is like the crying of the birds. So it's like an orchestra because every other domestic, you know, fowl that is around would always join. So in the Igbo language, it is translated as to a kind of a unified song of the birds. But I thought an orchestra of minorities would do the job better, you know, because again, it's a metaphor,
for the common people and for the plight in this case of
absolutely
Chinonso, who's this poor farmer whose lot just gets worse.
He represents the class struggle. Nigeria, I like to say, is a fiefdom of the invulnerable, which is to say that once people have power in Nigeria, whether it be political or economic power, they oppress the ones who don't, who are beneath them, in ways that you will not see replicated elsewhere in the world, you know. Like, if I don't like you, I've seen this happen, and I'm not exaggerating at all. If I don't like my neighbor, maybe I just don't like the way they talk, I can actually call the police and have them arrested and jailed in Nigeria.
Just because of your status.
Yes, because I can't have the money to pay them. So he, in some ways, is that you know, figure that embodies, is a microcosm of the minorities, of the poor.
In this 60th anniversary of Nigerian independence, do you want to have some way to voice your call for change in that country?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been doing that even though nobody listens. I mean, actually, people listen because the fisherman was very popular in Africa, in Nigeria. It was, and this has been, I mean, it's about a year old now. So I guess that I'm having some influence. But the problem is that we have very greedy people. And until there's a system of accountability, nothing is going to change. Just 2 weeks ago, Sarah, and I'm not exaggerating again, you can verify if you doubt it, we discovered that in my state, so we have a state system like the US, my state, Abia State, which is supposed to be one of the worst states in the country, our past governor who went 2 terms, that is 8 years, we discovered that this guy was withdrawing from the account of the state about $150 million, $150 million US dollars every month for 8 years. So not one day, not one time, every month, you know.
That's hard to compute, really.
No, it's hard to compute. So the only thing you can think of is this monster. This guy is a monster. He's not greedy. He's out of this world. He has gone beyond the stratosphere into another universe of insane greed. So folks like that exist every day, you know, in Nigeria, everywhere. So how can you stop them? It's a terrible thing.
Well, perhaps in your novel, there are many references to mouths, tongues, speaking, not speaking. Perhaps you can give voice to those people in pain.
I am trying to.
You've got a thing for tragedies, Chigozie.
Yes, I think so. But I've stopped. The third book, I promise, will not be a tragic one.
Well,
I promise you, Sarah.
Maybe you shouldn't, because you've had incredible success as a writer. Both of your novels have been shortlisted for the Booker Prize. But I understand your parents weren't initially sold on the idea of you being a writer. So how do they feel about you being a writer now?
Well, in 2015, they came for the event at the South Bank Centre in London for the Booker Prize, and they were mesmerised by just the scale of people who were, because they were like, you know, who is going to like read your books? Come on, just do something, be a doctor or a lawyer or something, and just write by the side. And they were afraid that I was wasting my talents. But, you know, that was a validation for them. And they became relieved that, okay, well, this can actually put food on his table. So they are relieved. And, you know, the second shortlisting was a mighty relief. But this time around, they wanted me badly to win. And,
they weren't.
You know, my mom was up all night and she was crying when I didn't. So I don't know. I feel like now maybe she's even regretting that.
Chigozie Obioma. And I have to say, I agree with Sarah Lestrange. Being shortlisted for the Booker twice is an amazing achievement. An Orchestra of Minorities is published by Little Brown. And Chigozie has been here in Australia as a guest of Adelaide Writers Week.